Welcome to the Sober Buddy Podcast, your boost of sober thinking and awesome life building. I'm Tara Zoe, CEO and co-founder here at Sober Buddy, and I am joined by Rebecca West Hensinger, former Mrs. Pennsylvania, triathlete, mom, and 1 year absolutely sober. I'm excited to talk to Rebecca and hear her story, but first remember to download and subscribe to the Sober Buddy app, do some challenges, get some motivation, share screenshots of your sober tracker, and tell Buddy how you're feeling today. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Tara. So happy to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one, I can tell. I could tell by your hat. I know this is going to be a great podcast.
A hat always makes things fun. You know, a hat is normally never necessary, but it's always fun.
Yes.
So here we are.
Yes. The only time I have felt a hat was necessary was last year when I was in Palm Springs. I actually had to buy a hat because the sun was so intense.
Oh my gosh, don't even get me started on that intense sun this summer. You know, it reminds me of like in Mario Brothers when the evil sun follows you around in the video game. Yes. That was all summer, right?
It was hot. It was hot for sure. Now, what area of the country? Oh, Pennsylvania, obviously.
Yes, ma'am. I'm on the eastern side of Pennsylvania in an area called the Lehigh Valley.
Okay, perfect. I love it. And I saw that you are recently sober for 1 year in August.
Yes,
congratulations.
Ma'am.
Right. That's awesome. And do you mind telling everybody your drug of choice?
So it was definitely alcohol.
Alcohol. Okay, awesome. Awesome. So tell me more about just like when you decided to get sober a year ago, kind of what was going through your head that made you make that decision?
Oh my gosh. So, you know, I've been drinking since I was 19 and I'm 40. I'll be 41.
Okay.
So it made me realize all together in one night that I had been drinking for my entire adult life. Mm. There was never a period of time where I wasn't having at least like a glass of wine to quote unquote unwind at night. When really, I think, you know, we all know that that is just totally bogus, right? That's bogus. Because wine doesn't help you sleep. It actually, you know, makes you sleep less.
Yeah.
And you wake up feeling anything but refreshed, hydrated, and ready to meet the day. So, you know, why did I do that to myself for so long? And I think, you know, just being a mom and having three kids who are now teenagers and having them around these kinds of habits and just having them be at that age where I know that they're really starting to not only notice what we do, but really think about why their parents do what they do.
Right.
For me, enough was enough. And that was actually Memorial Day of 2021. Mm-hmm. When I really decided was enough.
Right.
And then in August, you know, I didn't drink all summer, but in August, my husband and I went on a really great trip to Spain. And I definitely made the excuse to myself that I could celebrate and have wine in Spain because, quote unquote, why not?
Right.
And,
right.
You know, huge mistake because long story short, it just threw me back down into that dirty old basement of thinking,
right?
Of shame.
Shame. Of were shame. You ashamed because mm-hmm. you drank, or was there? It was it perpetuating other shames that you had?
You know what it was. I called my youngest. I called my son that night to say goodnight to him after drinking some wine in Spain and getting ready to go to bed, and. To me, it didn't sound like a normal conversation between us. And I felt like, I don't know, maybe he didn't say goodnight to me enough times. And again, it just threw me down that hole of self-doubt. Like, you know, oh, I miss my kids so bad. I feel guilty that I'm here on this vacation without them. And on a normal, sober night, I wouldn't have had those thoughts. And alcohol for me, and probably a lot of listeners out there, alcohol really played tricks on my emotions.
Right.
100%.
Right.
So it was that night that I decided, you know, alcohol can't even be a once in a while thing for me because it's just not worth it.
Yeah. Cause it just throws you. And you know, it's so funny. It's like when you get into an emotionally healthy place, it's valuable. You know, it's like, this really does affect my life in a major way, and being kind of all over the place, that it does throw a wrench in your plans for sure.
Oh, in every single way. I agree.
For sure. For sure. Now you work in education. Do you still work in education with kids?
So I was a teacher for many years. I taught kindergarten.
Okay.
And I left that position to be a stay-at-home mom.
Nice.
So now I work as a fitness instructor. So I'm still instructing. It's just now I just ride a bike in a dark room that goes nowhere and I yell at people.
Okay. So I admire this position. I was in a spin class, you know, when they're like playing the music and they're doing like the dances and everything. I was like, in my next life, I'm going to be a spin instructor. This is like, you're a DJ, but like everyone's doing something healthy, right? It's like a healthy DJ.
Tara, I love that you say that because, all right, early 2000s, I was into the club scene as a college student. I loved going out on a Thursday night, a Friday night, a Saturday night. Then it also became Sunday night, then Monday, then Tuesdays would really turn up. And before you knew it, I was, you know, flunking all of my classes at the really great private college that I worked really hard to get into. Right. All of a sudden, I was a D and F student.
Right.
And it was because of poor choices that I made. And when I reflect back on that time where it should have been the time of my life, I was making those bad choices as a result of alcohol and partying and not having my priorities correct. And so I loved that dance club scene.
Right.
And I'm telling you, some mornings at 9:15 a.m. at the gym I work at, I feel like I'm back there.
I hear that.
But in a better way. In the best way.
Yes. Yes. I have felt that because you do. There's something with like the lights and the music and like the with other people there. There is something that like really gets your emotions going. So when and I love that. Like I'm like, give me a laser show any day, you know? So when I experienced that, like in a cycling class, I always think that I'm like, this is like being at a club, but because you're also, your endorphins are going, like there's a ton of similarities, but it's healthy for you.
Oh, yes. And you never regret walking in that door. Nights where you're out clubbing and drinking to excess or doing whatever drug of choice or whatever is available, there's usually regret involved in that, whether you know it at that time or not. There's usually regret, and you could find yourself in really dangerous situations, especially as women, you know, young women.
Right.
I know I sure did.
Yeah. And even if you're not in a dangerous situation, you have done something to your body, you know, that does take a deficit, you know, as far as any kind of drink, because it's just not good for you too, you know, like, whereas again, the spin class or the, you know, cycling, whatever we call it. It was called spin when I first got into it. You know, it was a thing to call it spin a long time ago. Anyhow.
Oh, yeah.
It was like when it first got popular, everybody called it spin. But it does. And that's giving to you. So I love that for you. I love that you're kind of, you've transitioned that because you're a triathlete, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then, so what got you into being a triathlete? Like, tell me about the whole fitness movement thing.
You know what it is? So I've been teaching spin, and let's call it spin.
Yes, okay, let's call it spin. I think it's fun to call
it spin. Let's call it that, ladies and gentlemen. We're referring to indoor cycling, the most incredible workout that exists, in my opinion. And sounds like Tara's opinion, too.
Yeah, I do a Peloton. That's how I do it.
Peloton is so amazing. Dream job.
Yeah, Dream job. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay, continue on.
Yeah, so I got into spinning like 15 years ago when I was a postpartum mom, just looking to get back into shape and find a workout that I really enjoyed and looked forward to. And that happened to be spinning. And then I started teaching classes myself. And I really kind of got my strength on a stationary bike. Mm. And I met a friend at the gym who said, "Hey, Rebecca, you love cycling so much. Have you ever thought about riding a bike outdoors?" And I thought, I thought out loud, I'm like, "Oh no, that's terrifying. I'm sure that I'm going to get hit by a car. I'm going to crash. I'm going to really hurt myself. At the very least, I'll embarrass myself or I won't be able to keep up." Right. Well, this person lent me a bike for the summer, and the rest is history. Right. Because it was really, you know, that experience of somebody just kind of daring me to do something that I started road cycling. Right. And I had always run. I was a runner in college when I wasn't hungover. I was on a cross country team,
okay.
Which, by the way, I should have done so much better than I did. But right. Our meets were Saturday mornings, and you know I was out Friday night. So right. When that alarm went off at 6 a.m. on Saturday, sometimes I didn't even show up, and that's a real shame.
Yeah.
So I picked running back up. I've always been a runner. But the swim, because triathlon consists of a swim, a bike, and a run, all successively without a break in between.
Yeah.
And the swim was really the missing link for me. But my husband actually coached me in the swimming, and I ended up swimming a 5K. Like, I swam a 5K race. Nice. I went from not even being able to finish a full lap to swimming 3.2 miles outdoors.
That's crazy. Because swimming is a whole thing. I remember when I first swam in high school, I was like, this is so hard. It's not like when,
it is so
when
hard.
You're a kid, you're thinking, oh, I swim all the time or whatever, but it's different when you're lap swimming and you're and doing all that. So it is. But once I found that once you can get, when you get in swim shape, it's like running so much easier. Everything's so much, like you're in good shape.
Oh yeah. I would even wager to say that swimming might even be the hardest part of it.
Yeah.
Especially when you're racing, because you're next to all these other people who are swimming in your same direction. You're getting kicked in the face, slapped in the face, and you're trying to swim
like a survival
to like
sport.
Different points. It really is. You're trying to swim to different points.
Yeah.
And nobody swims in a perfect straight line. So it's hard because you're trying to spot, like every time you turn your head, you're trying to see exactly where you're going. It takes a lot of practice. And actually during that time in my life when I was doing like long distance, 140 mile triathlons, that's probably the time in my adult life when I wasn't drinking as much because I was so focused.
Yeah.
I was so focused on the training. And actually my boyfriend at the time was really ticked off at me. He's like, you won't drink wine with me at night anymore.
Right.
Like, yeah, I got to wake up and go swim laps, or I got to wake up and run 20 miles.
Right.
But when COVID happened, that was when things really fell apart for me because all races were canceled. And if you're a goal oriented person and now there's no goals in sight, like an upcoming race, when all of that just disappears,
yeah,
it was really tough for me.
So do you feel like in COVID you drank a lot more?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So much more, so much more. But that even culturally became a thing.
Yes.
Everyone's like, hey, it's 3 o'clock. Let's go. I'm like, now this becomes like a meme on Instagram.
Yeah, the meme
now
was like day drinking
through.
While homeschooling. It was like this whole thing.
Yes.
I remember I was like, oh my God, everything's falling apart.
It really kind of became this social norm.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, for me, I fell into that pretty hard. I really did.
Yeah, yeah. So and then you had that thing where you were in Spain and you were saying, I'm going to quit this, and you got sober. Now, how did you get sober? Did you just do it on your own? Did you end up going to a program? What did you do?
I did, because it was still during a time where in-person interactions were very limited in my area. Mm-hmm. All of my inpatient was done through Zoom.
Okay.
I only ever entered the place just for intake, and everything else was on the phone. So
okay.
I would, you know, listen in on the meetings, walking around the block with my dog nonstop. You know, I never actually got to be part of like a circle of people.
Right, right. Yeah, that was another thing that was a really big bummer about, I mean, that's the big thing that was the bummer about COVID, right? Is that we were so isolated. But you did it. And here you are a year later. What do you think is kind of like the biggest thing you learned about yourself during that process?
Oh, man, that's so hard. I think it's that generational chains can be broken. Mm. It's not easy, but they can be. Both of my parents struggled a lot with substances, not just alcohol, all kinds of other substances. It was a huge part of my upbringing.
Right.
you know, substances, just being around the household. My father did three attempts at treatment until finally he found his sobriety when I was 12 years old. And now he has 31 years,
oh, good
32
for him.
years.
Yeah.
Yeah. From all drugs and all alcohol.
Nice. Nice.
So he's really, really my hero. And he talked to me very candidly about these kinds of things. My mom, you know, she was my drinking buddy for a very, very long time. And I know that my mom still drinks. And it's sometimes really hard, you know, to watch her. Not for me, I don't feel tempted by it, but I just wish that she could feel just how empowering putting down the alcohol is. But as much as you wish that for another person, you won't be able to convince them.
No, you know? It has to be their choice. It has to be everybody's choice.
It really does.
Yeah, it has to come from kind of a point inside of yourself, you know?
I agree. So the thing I learned the most is that habits and generational things, or even things that are just in us, you know, like addiction really runs rampant in my family.
Yeah.
And, you know, just understanding that, and also understanding that with help, I can take control of that, is the most empowering thing that's ever happened to me.
That is amazing. And that's something that, so you said your kids are teenagers now, correct? Okay. So,
they are.
So here you are. So have you talked to them a lot about your sober journey or getting sober, or are they just more observing it?
Oh yeah, Tara. So here's the thing. Long story short, or long story long. So because I'm a woman involved in pageantry, when you're involved in pageantry, you pick what's called a platform. So it's kind of your community service or the cause that you feel very strongly about.
Right.
And because of my father's sobriety, and because of the opioid epidemic in our country, I felt very strongly that drug education and prevention was going to be my platform.
Right.
And so for the past 4 years, I've developed programming for elementary schools that I've brought to over a dozen schools in the state of Pennsylvania, where I come in and I talk about healthy choices. I talk about peer pressure, and I give them a really, really honest talk about why you should say no to drugs.
Right. And how old are these kids? Just curiously.
They're in fourth and fifth grade.
Perfect. Okay. I think that's a really great time. And I think that's when we, you know, that's kind of when you can start remembering things, and things get really impressionable at that age.
Oh yeah. It's really a pivotal age, especially fifth grade, because they're about to become middle schoolers.
Right.
So they're about to enter like big kid,
for sure.
You know, big kid land, you know, and their choices are really going to start affecting them, and they're going to see a lot of things. But in my area,
at that age,
so they really are. And in my area, it's so eye-opening to me when I have these talks with classes. How many kids raise their hand and say, you know, my mom or my dad is in jail because of this, or, you know, my dad really scares me when he drinks or when he does drugs, or just so many things that kids so willingly offer up, things that they've seen, things they've They want to talk about it. And they also want to understand, you know, why does my mom do this? Why does my dad do this? If it's so bad, you know, is my mom bad? Is my dad bad?
Yeah, that's a hard conversation too. Yeah.
Oh, it's really, really tough. So, you know, drug education has been my platform for the past 4 years. And, you know, turns out I have a drinking problem.
Now. So, okay. So this became your platform before you got sober.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And then do you think that highlighted your need to get sober?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. 100%. I'm like, wait, I can't go to schools and talk about drug prevention, because to me, alcohol is a drug. They're really
A substance
is a substance.
Yeah.
You know, something that kills you is something that kills you.
Yeah.
Something that makes you not be your best self, it doesn't matter what it is.
Right, right. Well, alcohol is an actual mind-altering drug. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not even just a concept. Yeah, it really
is. To me, there's no difference. So, you know, it really caused me to take a very, very hard look in the mirror.
Right, right.
And if I'm going into these schools and talking to these kids who are younger than my children,
right,
what does that say about me? And, you know, in pageantry, there people look at girls involved in this kind of thing all the time and think, oh, they just can't be for real, or they're not a nice person, or right. they just want to win, you know. And my cause is really important to me. And if it is that important to me, then I also better be walking that walk.
Right, right. And then, mm-hmm. so going kind of, the pageantry thing is interesting to me. So when did you get involved in pageantry?
I was 36.
You were 36. And like, what made you think I'm going to go get involved in pageantry?
You know what, Tara? I'm telling you, I am the kind of person that wakes up in the morning and has an idea and won't let it go.
Okay.
All the time. It's happened to me so many times in my life. I did know a woman locally who was a former Mrs. Pennsylvania. I saw her at an event years before I decided to do this. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, that looks really incredible. She looks so professional and put together, and she has great social skills. She's a great speaker.
Right.
Those are all things that I wanted, you know, I was aspiring to be those right. things too, but I never saw myself in that role until one morning I woke up and thought, I can see myself in that role. Mm-hmm. And turns out, you know, I was right, because I've held the title of Mrs. Pennsylvania for two different organizations. So
That's really cool.
I've been pretty successful in it. Yeah. It's been such a great experience. And like you said, and I'm a woman of faith, you know, I know that my platform has essentially saved my life too.
Right.
And I know that God has not made a mistake in that. It's just, it took me so long to see it.
Yeah.
It took me so long to see what was right smack in my face.
Right.
For how long?
Now, do you think that had to do with stigma, like the way that you saw alcohol addiction? Because that's a big thing that we talk about, is like, because we have this perception in our mind of what alcohol addiction looks like, or what an alcoholic looks like, and then we don't look like that, it's hard to see it in ourselves. Do you feel like that was part of that?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm like, oh, no, I can't be that bad off. You know, I don't drink every day. I didn't drink every single day. But eventually, it did kind of spiral into that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm lucky, you know, my husband and I, we get to travel a lot. We love to go out to eat, and that always included, you know, a bottle, at least one bottle, usually two bottles of wine. And, you know, eventually it turned into liquor, which, you know, was really, really a very, very bad thing for me. Mm. So, I think that I was part of a landslide, and I didn't even realize that I was in this landslide.
Right, right. For sure. I can see how that would, it just kind of gets away from you and catches up, you know, and then all of a sudden, it's so exciting that you saw it. You saw it, you were aware of it. I think probably being involved in, you know, recovery stuff has helped, it like helps identify things, you know, it helps you like become so aware of everything around you. Like for me, you know, it's just like so aware of even just every way that it affects my life now. You know, like it would affect my life. Like you said, like even if it's just that your muscles, you know, your muscles don't perform great. You know, the next day, because they're inflamed and you have all this inflammation and you can't perform, even if you're an athlete at even a great rate, you know, you're weaker, things like that. Like all of the subtle ways that alcohol affects our bodies and our minds, and anxiety and not sleeping and all, you know, all of the physical things that turn into mental issues as well. So I think that it's really cool that through this you found that now, and through your pageantry, which is really cool. And you've held the title, and you just gave your title over. You said, what was it, 7 days ago?
It was just this past Sunday.
Oh, 72 hours. That's what you're saying, 72 hours.
Yes, 72 hours ago.
And how do you feel about that? Do you feel like a loss, or is it a relief, or how does it feel to like kind of be releasing it? Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible. But you know what is really the best part of like the closure of all of it for me was, is that, you know, the dozens and dozens of girls that were competing just this past Sunday, they all kind of identify me. They know me as the sober mom.
Nice.
And a lot of these girls competing like for the MISS, the MISS division, are younger. They're in their 20s. They haven't started their families yet. And I just think if there's any kind of mark that I could leave on my experience in holding that title, it's that some of these girls will remember when they get married and have kids and have a career, that alcohol doesn't have to be the thing that they turn to, because truly not everyone is doing it. It's not the norm.
Yes.
Sometimes it seems like it is, but it's actually not. You know, sober curiosity, you know, is huge right now.
Oh my gosh, it's blowing up. It's blowing up.
It's huge. And the non-alcoholic beverage industry, what did they say, is grown by like it's 300% or something?
I know. And it's like, I love that with all the celebrities who are making like their alcohol brands, you know, that Brad Pitt made a non-alcoholic beverage brand. I think, yay. I know. I was like, yes.
It's just incredible.
Yes. It's way to so counter incredible. That, because we need cool people who are sober, you know? So it's like, and to say like, hey, this can also be a really cool life choice and a really empowered choice. I remember the first time I was talking to this girl. She was probably in her early 20s, and we were talking about sobriety, and I cannot remember like where she was from or what she was doing, but I remember that she said that she had made an informed choice. She's like, I made an informed choice to be sober, not because I had a problem, not because there was any family history, anything. She was just like, I looked at what alcohol will do to my life, and I made an informed choice to be sober. And I thought, that right there, that's the breakthrough that we need young people, I mean, older people too, but just starting with a new generation, like young people to have, is like, why in the world would you ever drink? Like I tell my kids, why would you add an obstacle to your life? Like life is so hard.
Life is hard enough.
I'm like life is so hard. And I'm like, you need every advantage out of the gate. You know, like do not add, you know, this obstacle of addiction to your life. Just don't even go there. Just save yourself the trouble of having to overcome another thing that was preventable, because there's a ton of stuff that's not preventable that you're going to have to overcome, you know? So,
I love that parenting advice. I love that.
And it comes from just like, guys, come on now, you know,
trust me, trust you don't want to do this.
You don't want to add another obstacle. So, well, and so I love that you're setting an example in the pageantry space, and even that you decided to go into it when you did, and that you were successful in that, and that you're now, and that you know, just the whole story arc of choosing, you know, that as your platform, and then it helping you to get sober, and then you helping other kids to get sober, which I think is amazing. And if you were teaching, like when you go in and you're talking to these kids, what is the one big takeaway you want them to have? Like when you meet with them, like, what are you hoping that nugget that stays with them is?
Ah, great question. So I think that when people enter schools, you can't come empty-handed. Mm-hmm. You're there to leave as a guest.
Yeah.
You're there to leave an impression on them that they will hopefully keep thinking about and maybe even always remember. So maybe you remember when you were in elementary school, if there was a guest that came to your school for an assembly or just to your classroom for like a special day, and what did they talk about? What did they bring? What do you remember about that person?
Right.
So when I come in there with, you know, a big sparkly crown and a sash that says their state, right away, their interest is piqued. right?
Right.
Right away, they're paying attention, especially the little girls. So what I'm going to say better be important.
Right.
And because they're fourth and fifth graders, it better also involve something that they can do, not just right. listen to, because kids will check out, but it needs to be something hands-on. So I developed a coloring page with a drug-free message.
Okay.
It's a butterfly that says, "Fly free like me by staying drug-free."
Okay.
And I give them a challenge. I'm like, this is a coloring contest. I give it to all of fourth and fifth grade classrooms. I work directly with the schools. And I say, I have some friends, other girls in the pageant, who are going to pick a winner from each grade. You know, do your best coloring, but make it your own. Maybe after this talk, you have another thing that you've taken away from the drug-free message. Maybe you want to include it on the paper, which usually they do. And so the winner of the coloring contest for fourth and fifth grade, they get a pizza party. And I have a local pizza shop that sponsors like dozens and dozens of pizzas
right.
for the coloring contest winner's class. But then I'm like, okay, but everyone who participates should really walk away with something. And my other job, I'm a baker. So
okay.
then I make ridiculous amounts of cupcakes and cookies and everybody gets something.
I love that you're a baker. We haven't talked about that at all.
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm telling you, I have my two dream jobs. So I go and burn a ton of calories and get that endorphin rush
right,
in the spin room.
Right.
And then I come home and make cookies, you know, and eat a quarter of the dough myself. So it
yes,
all
for sure.
equals out.
And then you go speak, which is great. It sounds like you're so active and involved. You must have a ton of energy. Well, probably you work
I
out
really
a ton,
do.
So you do have a ton of energy.
That's it. That's actually where I find my energy from. Plus, you know, Starbucks is good too.
Yeah.
But the takeaway, besides, you know, the good memory of the cupcakes, the pizza, winning a coloring contest, or maybe not winning, but still being rewarded for participating.
Right.
I want them to remember what I come in and talk to them about. And
right.
the message that I want them to remember is that, you know, you will probably come across this decision in your life in
right.
all likelihood. Somebody is going to ask you if you want to try something, and maybe you don't know if you should do it or not because you see your friends doing it. Maybe you've grown up like me watching your parents do it, or maybe even you think it's a rite of passage, right? But I am there to tell them that the most important thing you can do is say no, because
right.
you're saying no to something that will hurt you,
right?
You know, we can tell kids to just say no, but we do have to tell them why they need
right.
to say no,
right?
And it's because drugs and alcohol undoubtedly, 100% will hurt you. And it could also hurt your family and the people around you.
Right. I do think that's important for us to know. You know, I grew up, my father was a drug and alcohol recovery counselor as I was growing up. And it's funny the different way that I saw drugs and alcohol compared to friends. Because in my mind, I never was like, hey, this is a safe or just like, you know, a carefree thing to do. I always saw it as a path to addiction, you know, because my father would talk to us and I knew what he did for a living. I knew that he helped people get out of this huge issue in their life. And that was big. And he would educate us, you know, on like what it looked like and all of the different things. But there was always this idea that if you do any kind of a drug, you're going to become addicted. And that it will ruin your life, you know, because he's obviously dealing with very severe addiction. So I do know that that is valuable to teach children. There's this idea, especially in a child's mind, that like bad people do drugs, you know, or become alcoholics and good people don't. So if they see themselves as a good person, they might think that they can't become addicted to drugs or they can't become addicted to alcohol because they're not a bad person. But that's not how it works.
Adults can also think
yes,
that.
Adult, well, for sure. For sure adults think that. Or like, I'm not that kind of person. I don't have an addictive personality. I've heard that a ton. Or I don't, And not that everyone who drinks is an alcoholic or addicted to alcohol, but this idea that they can't become addicted is not true. You know, it is a mind altering substance that anyone can become addicted to, you know, and so, and that even if you're not addicted, it doesn't mean it can't negatively affect you. Like we were saying, it's not good for your body either way. You know, we know that like even one drink increases your chances of cancer. If you're just drinking once a week or one drink a night, you know, that increases, I think there were 7 different kinds of cancer. It increases your risk for.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if I were to speak, which I've only spoke to middle schoolers just a few times and high schoolers only once, because my focus really is elementary school. Any kind of substance, drugs or alcohol, it's not good for their brain development. Their brains aren't fully developed yet.
Right.
And I always tell those kids, this world, this society needs you at your best.
Yeah.
You know, one day you and I are going to rely on those kids in elementary school today to be our doctors, to be everything. Any person, you know, that provides a service to us is that generation. Like, it's going to happen. We rely on them to be their best. We rely on them to be the next inventors of great things. So the world needs them. I remind them of that too. You know, the world needs you, and you can't be at your best if drugs and alcohol are part of your life.
Right. Now, you can't be at your best. Curiously, do you ever talk to them about other coping tools? Because if you have trauma, or if you are experiencing things as a child or as a young adult that are really, you know, traumatizing or uncomfortable or causing you to be emotional, and you've been told, hey, don't run to drugs for an escape. It tells you drugs can be an escape, and you feel invincible, and you don't care if you die, and you don't care if you have obstacles, but you don't know any other way to cope, then all of the just say no stuff could go out the window, right? And we know that that happens. So are you in any way teaching them positive coping tools in any, like that if you are feeling bad instead of going to drugs, or if you are feeling left out of the group instead of, you know, doing the drugs to be part of the group, what can you do? Is that part of the curriculum or?
It's not. It's not. And just listening to you talk right now, I mean, the wheels in my head are turning about how I can incorporate that piece, because that's a really important piece of the puzzle. And at any age, you know, at any age,
because even if they're not doing drugs or not, it might be a good thing for them to know, even just to cope, so that they stand on more solid footing in life anyway, you know?
So important. Yeah. I need to actually make a note of that. That's a really, thank you so much for bringing that up. No, that's not part of the talk that I typically give, but from here on out, I'm going to be working on ways that I can touch on that and weave that in, because that is so, so important. That's so important. And like you said, once you hear, you know, people do use drugs and alcohol to escape or to feel a certain way. You're right. It does kind of get the wheels turning. Oh, well, I heard, so maybe I'll give that a try. I mean, when I started drinking my freshman year of college when I was 19, I liked the way that it made me feel uninhibited, because I was very shy and self-conscious in high school, to the point where I would wear sunglasses indoors, like as much as I could, because I was afraid to even like make eye contact with people. I was very shy.
Right. So it was a coping mechanism.
Extremely self-conscious.
Yeah.
And so when I felt uninhibited after that first night that I tried drinking, it was, I thought, the way that I always wanted to feel.
Right.
gave me like this false sense of confidence that I just couldn't get enough of.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do think that we can look at that and give tools for that. I love that. I love that that's something that you're going to look at doing. I'm like, woohoo.
Yeah. That's really important. I'm like, wait, where's my pen?
Well, this is great. Well, I love what you're doing. I love your life story arc here. I love that you have gotten into pageantry, that it's been just this incredible journey for you, sobriety, triathlons, and that you are continuing to further this education in young people and through your Instagram account. And we will tag that, by the way, in the show notes, everybody.
In the Sober Buddy app, such an awesome idea.
Thank you.
The Sober Mom Tribe, the Sober Mom Club. Yeah. There's so much inspiration out of there. And once you click on one of those little things, Instagram will start giving you more and more of that. So it almost becomes like this magazine that you can read every day that's curated just for you. And when you keep clicking on those motivational things, like I said, you'll see more of it. You want to see those things, you know, from Sober Buddy, from Sober Motivation. Right. It's like, you know, those little things when you look at your phone first thing in the morning, which I try not to do. It's very hard not to. But those are the things that I want to see first thing. It's just that, it's that firm foundation every day that you put your feet on. Yes. Every day that you get out of bed, you put your feet on the floor and you're like, I had a great night's sleep and I don't have any regrets because of drugs or alcohol. I made it another day.
Yeah.
I changed my life. What's next?
Right. And just continuing to be connected, you know, all of that kind of passive information that we're scrolling through, it is affecting our mind, especially our subconscious that can't tell the difference between reality and what it's, you know, just absorbing. So we always tell people just clean out your feed. In fact, one of the Sober Buddy challenges, I believe, is to go through and kind of clean out your social media feed, you know, to unfollow accounts that make you feel bad about yourself or give you that comparative kind of feeling or just expose you to, you know, drug and alcohol use, you know, a bunch of friends or something that are like posting like, hey, my life is happy and with their like, you know, alcoholic drinks or whatever it may be, and to fill it up with things that are going to help you move towards the life that you want to build and live, because it really does affect you. And that's another reason we do our like bite-sized challenges in the Sober Buddy app. It's like, just do a challenge a day and then just do it, you know, and then it will help you build all of the things you need, like the structure in your life so that you can stay sober long-term. So it's been, you know, that's a really big thing. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And so we'll send everybody to your Instagram and social media accounts so that they can also follow you, because you do have a great account that's motivational for athletics too. If you're trying to be a fit sober, you know, we have a couple people who are really into fitness when this Friday, which is a great outlet, by the way, to redirect your attention and time to. It's like taking that deficit in your body and making it into a positive. I love that. And
Yeah.
So, well, I've enjoyed having you on today. And
Same. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. And everybody who's listening, remember, you have got this. You have the power to make your life better than it's ever been before. Take it one moment, one day at a time. You have got this.